Folks, if you take a seat, we'll get started with our first Transportation Conference Committee here. But today, April 15th, I've been advised, by the way, that because of a unique holiday in Washington, D.C., taxes are actually due on Monday. So nobody has to run out of here and finish your taxes today. You have all weekend to do that. So, folks, if you'd settle in, we can get started. I've been advised that it's a minimum of three members on from each body when there are five-member conference committees, and I think we meet it on the House side. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here. Meet it on the Senate side, so we do have an officially quorumed conference committee. I'm going to ask the clerks from the representative or respective bodies to note the roll for the place. Just to be clear, the gavel starts with the House because it's a House file. So that, does that mean that Ms. Barr, you're responsible for attendance today? Okay, then that would mean that Patrick, you'll be responsible for it when Senator Gimsey has the gavel. Is that correct?
That'll be correct.
Yep. Pat, down there, or Crystal. Okay, you can worry about that when you have the gavel. Okay, we'll do fine. Before we start, I'd like us to just go around the table and introduce ourselves so we're all familiar with who we're working with. And because we are in the House, I hope you enjoy the fact that I do not have my jacket or tie on. It's the House. We can get away with that over here, and at least until they turn the air conditioning on and cool the place down a little bit. So we will be we'll be on House standards today. Let me start on this end of the table with the young lady who's not looking my way. Crystal, okay, thank you. If you'd introduce yourself, obviously I need to get to know who you are. So if you would pull the mic down, introduce yourself, and your capacity, we'll get started.
Crystal Nibby, Committee Legislative Assistant for Senator Gimsey. Okay.
Patrick Murray, Committee Administrator for the Senate Transportation Committee.
Benjamin Cruz, Senate District 47, Brooklyn Park, Champlin, and Coon Rapids.
Al DeKreif, Senate District 25, Lucera, Rice, Scott, and Sibley counties. And by the way, I came without a tie because my House members are always telling me you can't wear a tie over here.
You fit right in here, Senator.
Mr. Chair, thank you for having us today. Ted Lilly, Senate District 56, which is a central part of Washington County, from Stillwater to Woodbury area. And I actually noticed that my colleague to my right actually has a pair of jeans on, and I have not seen him in jeans yet, so this is amazing. So
breaking all kinds of ground here.
Mr. Chair, I'm Krista Boyd, Fiscal Analyst for the Senate Transportation Committee.
Bonnie Berezovsky, Senate Counsel.
I'm Craig Sunday, Senate Republican Research.
Senator Joe Gimsey, Chair of the Senate Transportation Committee.
I'm Representative Mike Beard. I'm the Chair of the House Transportation Committee, and I represent Shakopee and Prior Lake in the legislature.
Mark Nicely, Committee Administrator for the House Transportation Policy and Finance Committee.
Hi, I'm Anna Barr, and I'm the Legislative Assistant for the House Transportation Committee.
I'm Matt Burris with House Research.
Corinne Zewers, House Fiscal Staff.
Mark Murdoch, District 10B up north, part of Otter Tail County, all of Wadita County, and six townships in Becker. I own two ties, and I come to work in my golf shirt.
I'm Ernie Leidiger, District 34A, and that's Waconia and Watertown, Western Carver County, and cities to the west. And I sit next to your brother, sir, Senator.
Yes.
In government finance.
Excellent.
Yeah.
David Strom, Bobby Champion, is my representative, and I am House GOP Research for the Transportation Committee.
Good. Folks, thank you. And we won't take the time to go through all the members of the audience, but I have been slipped a note that says that the side-by-sides that we're going to start through today are available for the conference committee members. I apologize that there are no side-by-sides for the audience. I've been advised, though, that staff will have those available for our next meeting, which will be chaired by our friends from the Senate. So if you'd like to, members at the table here, open your book, and there are the rulers in the books yet, Anna? Members, if you need rulers, they Ron the page will bring them around. They're on the cart over there. Sometimes when the sheets are 17, 18 inches long, it's helpful to have a straight edge to kind of follow on. So if you would like to have one, just indicate, and the page will drop those down for us. Now, if you turn to the on behind the first tab, the side-by-sides on page R1. Okay. Okay, I am, the fiscal sheets, I think, is where we're going to start. Ms. Zewers, is that right? Do we want to start with the ones under the last tab? Is that where we're going, or where were I, or what do they look like in the book?
Mr. Chair, yes, it's the last tab.
Behind the fiscal tab there? Okay, members, correction, if you'll go to the last tab. And what we're going to do is have fiscal staff walk through the this, and we'll be working with Ms. Zewers and Ms. Boyd, or so you'll be going back and forth. So let's start with Ms. Zewers, and when you're ready to hand off, Corinne, I'll turn it over to Ms. Boyd, okay?
Mr. Chair and members, I'm going to be going very quickly through the spreadsheet because Mr. Burris and Ms. Verzowski are going to be going through the side-by-side in greater detail. So this will just be a very quick overview. On the spreadsheet on line 9, and I'll just be going over the change items on the spreadsheet, the House position includes a $1.8 million increase to the airport development and assistance appropriation, and this the $1.8 million spends down the balance in the state airports fund. The next change item is on line 22. This is related to Greater Minnesota Transit. The House position changes the appropriation from the Transit Assistance Fund from a statutory appropriation to a direct appropriation. And so in the totals below, you will notice that the House totals are quite a bit higher than the Senate totals, and that is due to that change, or most of that is due to that change. One of the things to note on the spreadsheet, the comparison percentages on the far right, Ms. Boyd and I attempted to create an apples-to-apples comparison in the percentage differences so that you can see the actual percentage differences versus seeing that change in the type of appropriation.
Ms. Sewers, in explaining the percentage columns that you and Ms. Boyd put together, I'm going up, for example, to the Aeronautics Division again. $1.775 million in the House, nothing in the Senate. Explain what the 1.5% difference is in relation to for us, would you?
Mr. Chair and members, the House position, the 1.5% is the difference between the fiscal year 12-13 biennium and the 10-11 biennium. So as you can see, even with that $1.8 million increase on the House side, the 10-11 biennium, it was $30.8 million was the appropriation, and for the 12-13 appropriation for the House, it's 30.3. So it's actually a decrease in comparison to the previous biennium.
Okay, so with the House position then, if you look at it that way, for the biennium, 12-13 is 30.3. The Senate's position, if you look at it that way, would be 28.6 roughly. Okay, then that the differences we're looking at on the little tool you've developed for us is vis-a-vis the previous biennium, correct?
Mr. Chair and members, that is correct.
Thank you for your indulgence in explaining that to me. Okay.
So moving on to line 23 and the general fund reduction, the House has a general fund reduction of $7.6 million for the biennium, and the Senate has a reduction of $8 million for the biennium for Greater Minnesota Transit. On line 24, for the Council for Transportation Access, this item is related to both the Greater Minnesota Transit appropriation as well as an appropriation to the Metropolitan Council. Both the House and the Senate have $100,000 going towards the Council on Transportation Access. The House provides a portion of this appropriation to Greater Minnesota Transit and or provides all of the appropriation to Greater Minnesota Transit, and the Senate provides a portion of it to Greater Minnesota Transit and a portion of it to the Met Council. So it's just a difference in terms of which agency is receiving the money for this council. Moving on to line 35, the general fund reduction for the commuter and passenger rail office in MnDOT from the House. The House eliminated the office, and so there's a $1 million reduction there, and the Senate decreased the appropriation for this office by $400,000. On line 44, the Senate decreased the appropriation for the freight office by $98,000 per year. This is a governor's recommendation based on a hazmat repeal that was included in last year's bill. Moving on to page 2, on line 65, both the Senate and the House have a change item related to state planning and research. These are federal funds, and the amounts are identical, and this is a governor's recommendation. On line 66, the disadvantaged business enterprise collaborative line item is $130,000 per year on the Senate side. This is for administrative costs for the targeted group business program and is only available if a law is enacted establishing the program. Moving on to line 74, both the House and the Senate have some federal fund changes under the state road construction program, totaling an increase of $66 million per year. And then I'll let Ms. Boyd cover the transfer to the for the economic development account on line 75.
Thank you, Ms. Boyd.
Mr. Chair and members, the $100 million in fiscal year 12 is to account for the economic trunk highway economic development account that is created in Article 2 of the bill, and this transfer is transferred to this account to cover state road construction projects that will meet certain parameters defined within the account language.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Stewart, we're back to you.
Mr. Chair and members, moving on to page 3 of the spreadsheet on line 106. Both the House and the Senate have an increase for the agency services portion of MnDOT's budget of $130,000 for the biennium. This is a federal funds appropriation and was a governor's recommendation. Moving on to the Metropolitan Council on line 38. This is similar to the Greater Minnesota Transit appropriation that I discussed earlier, in which the House changes the appropriation from the Transit Assistance Fund from a statutory appropriation to a direct appropriation. And Ms. Boyd and I did the same with the percentages on the right, in that we attempted to create an apples-to-apples comparison of both the House and the Senate provisions. On the next line, line 139, you will notice a $130 million decrease in the general fund appropriation to the Metropolitan Council on the House side. This eliminates general fund spending for the Metropolitan Council for the 12-13 biennium. However, the House position increases the appropriation up to $78.5 million in the tails. The Senate has a reduction of $32 million for the 12-13 biennium, and that's continued in the tails. And then the last change item on line 140 related to the Metropolitan Council is related to the Council on Transportation Access, which I discussed earlier. Okay. And then moving on all the way to page 5, because there neither the House nor the Senate had any changes for the Department of Public Safety. so we are moving to the contingency funds and tort claim line items on lines 225 through 229 on the spreadsheet. And both the House and the Senate eliminated the appropriations for these two activities, and that is because the money hasn't been spent in the last few years. So.
Okay.
And then moving on to page 6, I think Ms. Boyd is going to cover the revenue items.
Thank you, Ms. Sears. Ms. Boyd.
Mr. Chair and members, yes, first we have a summary of all the change items, which Ms. Sears has already covered all of them, I believe. So the bottom section on page 6 is just revenue changes, and most of these are in the Senate only. The first one is a policy piece in Article 2 allowing for issuance of an annual permit for transport of waterfront structures such as boat docks. Currently, people have to apply for a single-use permit for these, so this would allow an annual permit, and this will be a slight increase in revenue to the Trunk Highway Fund, $5,000 in 12 and 13, and then an ongoing biennial revenue of $6,000. And then under the Department of Public Safety, there are a couple fee changes. First, there is a fee increase of $1.50, a filing fee increase for vehicle services transactions. For the state, this will mean an additional $1.965 million a year to the vehicle services operating account in the special revenue fund, $3.9 for the biennium. And then the next is the is an extension of the $1.75 technology surcharge that is to fund MNLARS, the new DVS computer system. The original sunset date for that tech fee was June 30th, 2012. This extends it to 2015, so which will mean an additional amount of revenue to the special revenue fund of $13.4 million in 13, and then $26.8 for the next biennium. The last one is a shared item between the House and the Senate. It allows for a $2 donation on vehicle transaction applications and driver's license applications to be given for anatomical gift education. These are pass-through grants, so they're listed as revenue, but these are collected in a special account, and then the Commissioner of Public Safety will actually make grants to organizations that do advocacy for organ donation. So that would be an additional $366,000 for the biennium to be passed through. And I believe that one more thing, Mr. Chair, that we should probably point out at the bottom of the spreadsheet on page 7 is just the overall difference in the general fund cuts. The very last line, the line 312 of the spreadsheet, shows that in the House side of the document, the biennial change from base spending is $138.4 million, mm-hmm. and on the Senate side is $40.5 million.
Okay. Members, questions? I should point out while you're contemplating the data we've just been gone mm-hmm. over that our intention is that we'll be taking no motions or no votes today. This will be pretty much getting to know the spreadsheet, getting to know each other day, and talking a few things through. And if we have time, I do know there is one witness who would like to give a little testimony. And it will be my intention, at least while I chair, that we will not completely revisit every bill that's gone through our committees during the year, but as we discuss and negotiate between the House and the Senate, there may be items where we, as conference committee members, desire more information. We may be asking some folks to come up and have a few words with us, or if somebody feels absolutely compelled, you're certainly free to contact staff and go through the chairs if you feel you have more evidence to share. So we'll be open to that, but it's not our intention to open to hold full-blown committee hearings while we're trying to negotiate the differences between our bills. Any questions for the fiscal staff? Seeing none, let's ask Mr. Burris if he would like to start walking through the side-by-sides, which I believe are under the first tab. Correct, Mr.?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, there are a couple of tabs in your packet. One has the side-by-side. That is the small texted language that has two sets of columns. That's all of the language of the House and Senate positions. There's also a research tab that provides a summary and a kind of quick overview of comparison between the House and Senate positions. And Mr. Chair and members, I'll just start walking through some of the highlights of comparing the House and the Senate. And if you
certainly, to be very clear, which tab would you like us working under, research or the side by side?
Mr. Chair, I think I'll be I'll just be going off of the summary, which is the research tab. The
research tab. Thank you.
Might be a little bit easier to kind of get the quick view of each of the provisions as we walk through it.
To the staff, just as I look around the members of the committee here, I think I'm the only one that's been on a conference committee before. Have you been on one, Senator? A little. Okay. With the chairs have been on conference committees before. No one else has. So please don't assume too much. Feel free to go as slow as you need or entertain our questions.
Mr. Chair, I will try to be entertaining.
Okay.
Mr. Chair and members, the bill begins with Article 1 that contains on both sides all the appropriations. Ms. Sears and Ms. Boyd walked through a lot of the change items, and I won't go into the detail behind the appropriation amounts, but instead cover some of the differences between the House and the Senate. The first couple of sections provide a summary of appropriation amounts and define some terms. In the appropriations throughout, there are some subtotals and totals that I won't get into unless there are questions on that. The first difference was already touched on, which is subdivision 2, multimodal, within section 3. That's the difference in appropriation amount between the House and Senate. And then on R5, I'll interrupt myself and note that in the bill comparison summary document, the leftmost column contains page numbers that are R1, R2, etc. That refers to the page numbers of the actual document, the actual reviser side by side. So that if you do want to get back to the language, you can use the R1 through R54 or so numbers to see as a cross reference to get back into the language. And I'll use that to identify where we are in the summary. On R5, the transit appropriations, the direct appropriation shift on the House side was mentioned. This is a change that on the House side would, instead of providing for a statutory appropriation that provides open spending authority for both Greater Minnesota Transit funding from MnDOT as well as for the Met Council to utilize to spend all funds that are available to them through a couple of accounts that's primarily funded from the motor vehicle sales tax. On the House side, those funds are provided solely through the budget process as part of the direct appropriations made in each biennial budget. The funding shift for the Minnesota Council on Transportation Access was covered as well. And then there's one other provision that Mr. Berzovsky can note that's on the Senate side only.
Ms. Berzovsky.
Mr. Chair and members, on the R5 page, the difference I believe that Mr. Burris is alluding to is that that the Senate transfers $4 million in each year of the biennium from the Metropolitan Transit operating account to Greater Minnesota Transit operating account. And this is this comes from MVEST revenues, and this is intended to backfill the cut that that is made in the Senate bill of $4 million in each year to Greater Minnesota Transit.
Okay, thank you.
And then
Mr. Burris, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, R7 has appropriations on the Senate side for passenger rail. The House side, as was mentioned, does not make an appropriation. The House language also puts into place a prohibition on MnDOT from expending funds for commuter and intercity passenger rail activities unless there are special circumstances that are identified. The next item where there is a difference is on R7. This is in part of the state roads appropriations. And these are items that are only on the Senate side.
Ms. Perezevsky, Berezovsky. I'm going to learn to say that before the afternoon's over. Do you need to explain that to us? Is that the economic development money?
Mr. Chair, yeah, there are a few differences, and I think Ms. Boyd alluded to some of them already, but one of the major differences is that the Senate language authorizes the commissioner to transfer up to or to use up to $100 million
okay.
For trunk highway economic development projects, mm-hmm. and there is statutory language that we will reach later on in this walkthrough that creates a trunk highway economic development account in the trunk highway fund.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Matt Burris. Sorry.
Mr. Chair and members, on R11, the local roads appropriations, mm-hmm. there are some technical differences. The overall general effect is the same, and the appropriated amounts, I believe, are the same between House and Senate. There are some other technical differences that I won't go into unless there are more detailed questions that you'd like answered on that. Mm. I think that brings us to page 3 of the bill comparison summary to R16, the Metropolitan Council appropriations. Again, on the House side, there is a direct appropriation from the Transit Assistance Fund. The House language also freezes the amount of funding that's to be provided to the suburban transit providers based on the amount provided in fiscal year 2011.
Mm-hmm.
Another House-only provision is holding the amount of requiring the Met Council to hold its service level for Metro Mobility Services to be at the same level that's currently provided, so that the next couple of years Metro Mobility Services would not change. And again, there's the Minnesota Council on Transportation Access funding shift. The overall amount doesn't change for that council, but on the House side, all the funding is provided through MnDOT.
Mr. Chair?
Ms. Berezovsky.
Thank you. On the Senate side, on Section 4, Metropolitan Council, there is, first of all, a reduction that I think was reviewed by the fiscal analysts of $16 million each year for bus operations. The Senate also specifies $140,000 in each year is for transit for disabled veterans. This is a statutory program that the council is required to run, so this just makes specific how much of the appropriation is for that purpose. And then on the Senate side, there is language that specifies the priorities or the strategies that must be used in order for the council to avoid service reduction and fare increases in bus service. The first one is the use of the Metropolitan Council operating reserve. The second one, let's see, I should have this language in front of me. The second one is the transfer from livable communities funds that we will get to in a little more detail fairly soon. And then is service reductions or route elimination, and finally, fare increases.
Okay. Just a moment here as we're looking through this. I'm trying to, the revisor's page, it says R16 for the Metropolitan. That's where it starts the Senate's, the House side. So Senate starts here, okay, and continues R17. The language that you just referred to, Bonnie, will be where?
It's on R18, Mr. Chair.
There we are. Okay, great. Members, you all been able to figure that out and follow along?
Mm-hmm.
Good deal. You're all much quicker than I am. That's a good thing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for doing that because I was lost.
I can see it in your eyes, Representative. That's why I asked the question.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Berezovsky.
Could I just make one explanatory comment, especially for people
please.
Who, for whom this is the first time they've been looking at a revisor side by side, that the House language appears almost entirely in bill order, and that's on the left side of our comparison.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The Senate language is flipped around by the revisor in order to compare similar or identical provisions. So for those of you who are familiar with the Senate, bill, it's particularly confusing to find language, but hopefully the summary will be a help in that, because it does denote the R page where the language appears.
Ms. Berezovsky, if I can ask just a further question, just because I'm interested in this, and maybe the members don't know, the reason we're in the House today and the chair of the first conference committee is the House chair is because we took up a House file, and the reason we took up a House file is because the House passed the bill first. So that's why we're doing this in this order. I wonder then if the reason the bill, the House file is in complete continuous order on the left side of the page is because it is indeed a House file. And if it had been the other way around, would the Senate file then have been the one we'd have run straight from A to Z, and then the House one would have been all chopped up? I'm curious.
Mr. Chair, I believe that is generally the case.
Okay.
I don't know if it's always the case, but I believe that is generally the way the reviser sets these up.
Well, I just want the new members of the Commerce Committee to kind of know how things proceed around here, and there is a reason for almost everything we do, usually. So, thank you. Is that it for your comments at the moment, Bonnie?
Yes.
Great. Mr. Burris, thank you. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair and members, my apologies. I did mean to mention a little bit more about the side-by-side and to build on what was mentioned or what was described with that. You'll notice in the side-by-side that in some cases there's nothing on one side or nothing on the other side, and that is pretty much always going to mean that it's a Senate-only or House-only provision. And in other cases, there'll be language on both sides. It doesn't necessarily mean, if you see language on both sides, that the language is exactly the same. So it could be a similar or competing policy provision. And in some cases, they're somewhat substantively different, but located across from each other. But the point of the side-by-side is to try and provide some alignment of where things are between the two bills.
Thank you. Representative Leidiger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to further inquire about how that's put together, are you then also saying that the sections are different from the original bill that we passed out of the House, that you may actually move the language to a whole different section or not?
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair and Representative Leidiger, the sections aren't different, and so the numbering is the same as the original bill, but the order in which it's presented for comparison purposes is rearranged some. There's one exception, but for the most part, the House side is in the same order as the bill, and the language is exactly the same as what was passed by the House. And the Senate side, it's exact same language, but the order is rearranged in order to line things up. So one side sort of serves as the anchor, and the other side gets adjusted to line things up.
That makes sense. Thank you.
Further questions? And members, I'm going to have my head down a lot, because I'm following along just as you are. So if you need to ask a question, please just speak up and get my attention. We'll be happy to address your concerns. Mr. Burris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, I'm now on page 4 of the Back to the Bill Comparison Summary document. This is on R18. This section contains the appropriations for the Department of Public Safety. There is a couple of differences, possibly technical, possibly policy, on between the House and Senate on prohibitions concerning what funds and what personnel can be used for capital security purposes. And the Senate contains a legislative report that is reproduced from the previous biennium budget, was required under that biennium as well, on the Vehicle Crimes Unit. R25 is a House-only provision regarding the county's Transit Improvement Board. And this provision allows the board to allocate funds to the Metropolitan Council's bus operations dependent on a general election referendum. Currently, the county's Transit Improvement Board does provide funds to the Metropolitan Council, but they're statutorily limited to transit ways, so bus rapid transit and rail. This provision would allow for additional funds to go to the Met Council for their regular route bus service. R27 is also it's a related provision to the board funding, and prioritizes their repayment of the debt service on bonds as the first priority before providing any other grants. Page R27 at the bottom of page 4 is actually just a technical difference between the House and Senate, and that reduces the fiscal year 2011 appropriation, and that's based on the amount of federal aid actually coming in. Page 5 of the bill comparison summary, R30. This provision exists on both the House and the Senate side. This is the authority for the Met Council to transfer some of its funds from the Metropolitan Livable Communities Fund. There's some differences in the amount of funds and the accounts from which funds can be transferred, kind of the essence of the difference between the House and Senate. There's a similar transfer provision having to do with the right-of-way acquisition loan fund program. Again, the Met Council is permitted to fund its bus operations in part through a transfer from this program. The difference between the House and the Senate is primarily on the amount of funds that are allowed to be transferred. R31 contains a House-only provision. It's another transfer authority, and this authority is for the Met Council within its operating budget to shift funds from a couple of its budgetary categories into bus operations. Those categories include government affairs, public affairs, regional planning, and local planning assistance. And then finally on R32, this is a technical provision that is usually inserted with Metropolitan Council related provisions about applicability of the provisions.
Okay.
Mr. Chair and members, at the bottom of page 5, Article 2 begins. R32 contains a conforming change to a provision that that will come up later, so we'll just hold off on getting into that. That's the same at the top of page 6. R32 is another conforming change for a fixed guideway reporting and planning provision. R33 is a House-only provision that is the other piece of the direct appropriation. This actually changes the statutory language to eliminate the statutory appropriation from the Transit Assistance Fund. And then R34 brings us to a Senate-only provision, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair, Senate Section 3 on R34 on the Senate side creates the Trunk Highway Economic Development Account, and this was we had referred to this earlier in the appropriations section, and this creates a new account in the Trunk Highway Fund that would fund trunk highway projects to promote economic development. Money in the account is to be divided 50-50 between the Metropolitan MnDOT District and the Greater Minnesota Districts, unless there are not enough applicants that meet the requirements for funding under this account. In that case, the commissioner can allocate the money in the account without regard to location in the state.
Probably want to talk more about this later when we get into making motions and so on. That sounds like a project that the commissioner talked to us about earlier in the year. Thank you. Mr. Burris, are you going to do 34?
Sure, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Mr. Chair and members, Section 4 on the House side and Section 4 on the Senate side adjusts the date range for the dates that are used for counties calculating how much money goes in the subsequent calendar year for the county state aid highway system. So the county state aid highway funding, as well as municipal state aid street funding, is distributed on a calendar year basis. In both cases, the funds are figured out from a combination of actual receipts and then estimates. So a couple of months of actual receipts and then a few months of estimates. This uses this is a shift so that it's more estimates and less actual receipts, and will align the process internally for MnDOT with how the November forecast works.
Okay. Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair, Section 5 on the Senate side is changes the eligibility requirements for towns to receive money from the town road account in the County State Aid Highway Fund. The current law bases eligibility on a minimum levy amount that is tied to a percentage of taxable market value. So the town has to have levied that much in the previous year in order to be eligible for town road funding. This section would change the minimum levy requirement to say that an eligible town must have levied at least as much as it had received from the town road account in the previous year.
Okay. There's several Senate ones here. Why don't you just keep right on going? We'll let Mr. Burris have a rest for a moment, may we?
Okay. On page 7 of the summary side-by-side, Section 6 is the same language that Mr. Burris just reviewed previously about the range of time that MnDOT has to consider in assessing how much is available for the County State Aid Highway Fund. And this Section 6 is the same language with regard to the Municipal State Aid Street System. Section 7 is the first of several provisions on the Senate side, they aren't consecutive, that extends the Department of Public Safety Driver and Vehicle Services ability to collect a technology surcharge of $1.75 on various types of transactions, extending it from its current sunset date of June 30, 2012 to June 30, 2015. And this Section 7 applies to vehicle registration renewals. Section 8 is the first of several non-consecutive sections that have to do with disability plates. Section 8 allows an eligible vehicle owner to obtain both a motorcycle disability plate and one set of disability plates for another motor vehicle, without the necessity of obtaining the approval of the Council on Disability, which is now a requirement under current law to have more than one set of plates. Section 9 is related to something Mr. Burris spoke about before, which is, and this one requires DVS to include a provision for vehicle owners to donate $2 for organ donation education when they are in the process of vehicle registration and renewal. Mm-hmm. And there's an effective date of January 1, 2012. Section 10 relates to Gold Star license plates, and those are already in statute, but the Senate language would expand the eligibility for these plates to include legal guardians, siblings, and children of a person who died in military service. Current law says you have to be a spouse or a parent of the military member. Section 11 includes a $1.50 per transaction filing fee increase for motor vehicle transactions. It's in the deputy registrar section of law, but it also would apply to the department when the department processes motor vehicle transactions. So the registration renewals are increased from $4.50 to $6, other vehicle transactions from $8.50 to $10. Section 12 has, I believe, two changes, but they're the same change I spoke about before, extending the technology surcharge collected by DVS from 2012 to 2015. And this applies to issuance of original and duplicate certificates of title. Sections 13 and 14 relate to the disability plates that I spoke about a moment ago. The first one, Section 13, it has to do with proper display of the certificate, of a disability certificate. And in this case, it requires a motorcycle owner with a disability certificate to have the certificate secured to the motorcycle. And in Section 14, it requires the commissioner to design the disability certificate for a motorcycle so it can be secured to the motorcycle. Section 15 is Senate-only language, and that includes within a current permit class, a current annual permit class, for commercial boat hauling, also the ability to transport waterfront structures, such as boat docks and lifts. And this section has an immediate effective date.
Okay. Well, Mr. Burris, we're on to a run of House-only side, so why don't you start with Section 16 or Section 7 in the House file, fees.
Mr. Chair and members, Section 7, this again it regards the $2 donation in relation to the organ donation program, and this is on the driver's license side, whereas the previous one was on the vehicle side of things. There are also a couple of Senate provisions.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Berezovsky.
On the Senate side, Section 16, Senate-only language, it goes through the schedule of driver's license and state identification card fees, and it appears to reduce them by $5 in every case. But later in the section, it also specifies that the driver's license agent, who is the issuing agent for these cards, may collect and retain a $5 fee. So, and that is current practice, but it isn't called out in the statute. So there's no practical effect of that change as far as the applicant for a card is concerned. And then there is also another extension of the $1.75 technology surcharge, and this applies to driver's licenses and ID cards.
Okay. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, Section 8 on the House side is a House-only provision. This is the first of a series of non-consecutive provisions regarding training and instruction on carbon monoxide and the dangers of carbon monoxide poisoning. The provision in this case is a directive to the Department of Public Safety on rulemaking to change its rules regarding driver education to provide additional information on carbon monoxide. And then Section 9 on the House side, Section 17 on the Senate side is another piece of the organ donation. This is the part that actually creates an account and creates a statutory appropriation of any donated amounts for the organ donation registration and participation increase program. And then Section 10 is a House-only provision. This is another piece of the carbon monoxide poisoning. It would add information on carbon monoxide to the driver's test and make some technical changes in the structure of that for clarity. Section 11 also deals with the carbon monoxide provision. This is would require a change to the driver's manual to provide some additional information on carbon monoxide. Again, that's House only. And then Section 12 on the House side and Section 18 on the Senate side are identical. There were a couple of conforming provisions to this that I mentioned earlier, and this provision expands some reporting and financial planning in conjunction with capital requests provisions related to fixed guideways.
Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair, on the Senate side, Section 19 is the last of the sunset extensions for the technology fee, and this appears in the language that creates the driver and vehicle services technology account. Okay. Section 20 has to do with the opt-outs or replacement service providers, and this provides that the Metropolitan Council assistance to replacement service providers has to be reduced by $4 million in each year of the biennium, and this relates to the funding for Greater Minnesota Transit that we spoke about earlier.
And then, the last two. Mr. Burris, why don't you wrap up on page 10 there?
Mr. Chair, the Section 13 on the House side, Section 21 on the Senate side is the final piece of the organ donation provision. It's the same between the two. Between the House and Senate, and requires a report from the department on the finances behind the funds used. Finally, Section 14 is House only, and this is the last piece of the carbon monoxide provision. And this is a technical change that restructures part of the statutes. And that, Mr. Chair, wraps up the side-by-side. unless there are questions.
Question, Senator Cruz.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. I was wondering if it would be possible to get a brief explanation of the different House file notations throughout the side-by-side. I noticed some are on provisions that were included, some are on provisions that were not included. Could we get an explanation of that?
Certainly. Senator Cruz, so I understand your question. Could you pull up an example easily there, or one you're thinking about?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. If you look right now, I'm looking at on the bill comparison, page 9, second up from the bottom, R53. If you look right to the right of that, no comparable provision, but then there's a notation to House File 1140 and the engrossment notation.
I think I know what that was about. Mr. Burris, do you want to explain it, or shall I?
I'll take a first crack, and sir, then you can improve upon me, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, there are a couple of notes peppered throughout, as you mentioned, and I forgot to highlight those. Those reflect provisions that have either existed in previous versions of the House file but did not exist in the House file as it passed the House floor. And I also included a couple of notes on equivalent House files that were heard in on the House side in Transportation Committee, but hadn't moved through separately. So it's intended as a cross reference to highlight bills that other members in the House might have been doing some work on, but that the House doesn't have a formal position reflected in the omnibus that passed the House floor.
And I think Senator Cruz, if you look on page 8, the second one up from the bottom, not only has C House File 1140 first engrossment, also has a notation to a House File 347 House. I think that's where that language came from. It was rolled into House File 1140 as it was passed out of committee. But when we got to the Ways and Means Committee, we call it something else, but the Ways and Means Committee, there was an amendment to strip out all of these provisions, and that's what happened. So we included the notes so it could remind us of that event. Good question. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Members, further questions? Senator Howe, welcome to the committee. We did do introductions earlier, but we'll just point out to everyone that you are Senator Howe from Red Wing, and we'll do introductions again next time when we reconvene. So glad you're here. Well, members, that brings us to the 2 o'clock hour, and I'd hope to have about an hour of dwell time just to get to know each other and just to start the process here. Someone who's signed up to testify, Giogo Race. Giogo, are you here at the moment? Here you are. Would you like to come down and say a few words? And I think you work Minnesota State Council on Disability. Is that an executive branch position, Mr. Race?
It is indeed, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you for joining us today. And again, please identify yourself for the record for those listening at home and make your comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Giogo Hayes. I'm with the Minnesota State Council on Disability. Appreciate the time to testify today. We also work very closely with the Minnesota Consortium for Citizens with Disabilities, and so I'm speaking on their behalf today as well. Okay. We at the Minnesota State Council on Disability would like to express our concerns with the decrease in funding in transit and in support of some language regarding the Metro Mobility and Disability Plates. Our major concern regarding the bills is the transit cuts, both through Met Council and Department of Transportation. People in Minnesota make up about 20% of the people in Minnesota. About 20% of those people have disabilities, and for many of them, public transportation is the only way they can get to work, school, and medical appointments. One argument has been made that the MVEST money could be used to backfill some of the cuts going on. We would just like to say that we have concerns with that, as many other people have said before, given its lack of consistency in fulfilling its forecasted revenue. I do also want to say that there's been some proposals and a reaction from the Met Council with possibility of fare increases. And in Minnesota, of the people in Minnesota with disabilities, 20.4% of them live under the poverty line. And so many of them cannot afford a 50-cent fare increase, or much less a $4 fare increase. But I do want to say a special thank you to Chair Beard for the language that you put in regarding Metro Mobility and holding the funding constant at the January 1, 2011 levels. That's certainly something that we at the Disability Council support. And then in regards to the greater Minnesota Transit, there are still two counties in the state of Minnesota that do not have any type of public transit, and there's in many other counties they only have transit in the larger municipalities, so certainly not a comprehensive service. And this is of great improvement since 2007, when we started working in partnership with the Department of Transportation, when at the time there were seven counties that didn't have transit. So there certainly have been improvements, and we have concerns that with the cut to Greater Minnesota Transit, that progress will diminish and we won't get to 100% of counties. And then two more things. I would like to point out, put the cuts of transit and the transportation budget in context with some funding cuts in the Health and Human Services budget for non-emergency medical transportation. Non-emergency medical transportation is for people who are on medical assistance, who get some funding through the HHS budget to go to medical appointments. And the idea behind that is for people that need to go to preventative care, so avoid getting them in the emergency room to get the most expensive care. And so we have concerns that with the cut to non-emergency medical transportation and the simultaneous cuts to public transit through the Met Council and Greater Minnesota Transit, that'll disproportionately affect people with disabilities and their ability to get to medical appointments. The last thing I would just like to touch on is the motorcycle plates. That's a portion of the bill that we certainly support. Prior to this language, if you rode a motorcycle and wanted to park your and needed to park your motorcycle in a disability parking space, you had to take a hanging tag and somehow display it on the motorcycle. Clearly, that's a way for people to steal that and use it misuse it in a negative way. So we want to make sure that people with disabilities that ride motorcycles certainly have access to disability parking spaces whenever necessary and are able to use it in an appropriate manner. With that, I'll conclude my statements. Thank you very much to the committee for hearing my comments. I'd be happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Race. Questions for the testifier, the gentleman, Representative Leidiger?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On that last point, of course, that's what stuck in my mind. Do you have a suggestion on what should be done to make sure that these tags are not stolen off of a motorcycle?
Mr. Race?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Leidiger. I think the bill actually addresses this pretty well. There are two provisions in the bill, and council can certainly correct me if I'm wrong. If this bill doesn't pass, you cannot get a disability license plate for a motorcycle. You can only get them for a vehicle. So this would allow you to have a license plate, which is clearly screwed on to the motorcycle. And second, there's another provision. My understanding is there's another provision in this law that would say that if you are going to use a disability tag on your motorcycle, it has to be attached to your motorcycle in some way so that you're not just taking the tag that normally had gone on your mirror and then simply try to put it on your motorcycle in some way.
It was a bill, Representative, that was heard in the Senate and not heard in the House, but
okay,
sounds like one we may want to consider adopting.
Thank you.
Senator DeGryf.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I might bring this forward. I actually brought this bill forward, and we have a number of veterans. In fact, the person that testified was a Vietnam veteran who lost a leg in Vietnam. He rides a motorcycle with a sidecar, and when the law changed, they tightened up the handicap plate law. He was basically able to have a plate on his vehicle and then a placard, and that placard doesn't work well on a motorcycle because somebody could take it or it could get blown away. So this would allow him to, again, have a license plate on his motorcycle.
Thank you for the input. Members, further questions for the testifier? Thank you, Mr. Race. I appreciate you coming down. We'll
thank you so much.
Consider that going forward. Well, members, our intent today was to go through the side-by-sides and get to know each other a bit. We've come to a little after 2, and I have another appointment in about 20 minutes we'll have to go to. So, members of the audience, thank you for coming. Unless there's other compelling testimony that needs to be given at this point, we will be meeting several more times. You can be sure of that. The next time will be the Senate gavel. Senator Gimsey will be the chair, and we'll let him pick the time and the place and what kind of coffee he's going to be serving us, and that'll be all yours. And cookies, okay.
I better not make that promise.
Now, I was going to encourage you all to take the side-by-sides home with the weekend and contemplate them before you come back on Monday, but before I do that, let me ask staff if we're allowed to take them out of the room. No, I just got a no. So if you leave them here, we will staff will take care of them and have them wherever we need to be when the next meeting is called, and that will be Senator Gimsey. Do you have any concluding remarks before I adjourn us for the day?
Nothing in particular, but count on it being relatively soon, probably right after the
the holiday week here, and we'll get started right away and try to get through this.
So okay. Well,
appreciate everybody being here and your input.
With that, members and folks in the audience, have a good holiday week, and we'll see you at the call of the chair. We're adjourned.